is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. Today, our annual Dawn Chorus Walk, this year from Derrynconhy to Lord Brandon's Cottage. Over the next 2 hours, the rise and fall of the word song. Lazy birds, ridges that might have last grown potatoes during the famine, the waterfall where Queen Victoria was eaten by midges. On a very cold night, Doughty Donoghue's car was stuck overnight on Galway's bridge. Ruined cottages where the charcoal workers lived. In the heart of 1,500 acres of oak woodland, the richest and most colourful carpets of mosses. Looking over the whole expanse of the Upper Lake, the Black Valley, the McGillicuddy Reeks, the bare dome of Purple Mountain. Herds of wild goats, dozens of deer, the islands, McCarthy's, Eagle, Ronan's, Duck, Juniper, Arbutus, Oak and Stag. Lord Brandon's round tower restrained his unfaithful wife. And all the way, the birds will sing, hopefully. This is sea eagle country, swans, duck, waterhen, as well as thrush, blackbird and robin. I'm joined by Dan Kelleher, superintendent of Killarney National Park from 1963 and later regional manager of the National Parks and Wildlife Service until 2001. Ornithologist Ed Carty, farmer, ponyman, keen observer of nature, Jean Tagney from Garamine, and Danny O'Keefe, the new regional manager of Killarney National Park. We're recording this programme on April the 7th, starting at 5.30, when sunrise is at 6.49. On our broadcast day, April 29th, sunrise is at 6 a.m, 48 minutes earlier. Let us have your story on the Dawn Chorus, or of this area from Derrynconhy to Lord Brandon's Cottage, and we'll use it on later programmes. Write Frank Lewis, Gillon Mangerton Road, Buckhurst, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com, text 083 300 3300, or phone 066 712 3666. It's just after 5.30. It's pitch black. Well, I say pitch black. There's a full moon in the southern sky behind the trees close by us here at the moment. It's cool. We're standing just inside the barrier, about a mile on the Killarney side of the Derrynconhy Church. This whole area is covered in oak woodland. We're standing in the middle of a field of lazy beds where potatoes were grown perhaps as long ago as during the Great Famine of the 1840s. If there was light, we'd see that we were looking down on Newfoundland Bay, the eastern part of Killarney's Upper Lake, and in the background, the great bare bulk of Purple Mountain. Now there's a great stillness, except the Derrynconhy Cascade in the background, and there isn't any breeze this morning. It's wonderful, but there's no bird song yet. Jean, a number of people told me when they were driving the stretch of main road from here to Lady's Ewe, they get the feeling the area was haunted.
I don't know a lot about it, but you have the banshee here on around the Derrynconhy Church. The banshee, she've always lived here on the church. I wonder if she's still here, because there was mass said in the Derrynconhy Church for a long time. There was mass said but the last 70 years, it's a...
And Ed, apart from the sound of the waterfall, there's no sound. The birds still haven't woken up.
You're wrong there. I just heard a mallard way distant in the background and the first few notes of a robin, but it is very early. A loud noise such as a car passing in the background, a dog barking, as Jean said earlier on, somebody will bring out a wheelie bin, any of these noises or bangs or anything like that will wake up the birds and they'll burst into song, and it might only be for a minute or two before they go back to sleep. I would suspect things like wren, wood pigeon, dunnock, great tit with its high piercing teacher, teacher, teacher call. We'll hear plenty of them over the next hour or two.
Indeed. Jean, the stories these lazy beds we're standing on could tell.
As Dan said there, of course, there grew a lot of potatoes on these, but it was on these lazy beds too that grew the grain. There was nobody sitting grain in the flat field at him that thought that I should make the ridge the same as growing potatoes. And they had to make the ridge. That's where they all grew the grain at one time. You'd see them way up the mountain where they grew the grain up the mountains. And where you'd see them in the mountain up, that was all grain that was set up in the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Because you'll see these lazy beds throughout the mountains here, from Tork all the way to Lady's View.
That'd be pretty wide, all right. It could be at least 5 feet wide, the bed, but they were for grain.
Dan, these lazy beds told a tale of a tough, hard life when the life expectancy was about 34 a life. We can't begin to imagine what it was like.
Well, to make these lazy beds, it was all done by hand. And it was generally done in areas where you had a small area of land, around cottages or other such buildings. And the reason they put these lazy beds, particularly if the ground was wet, and to improve the drainage, they'd raise up the soil into lazy beds, and that would prevent they wouldn't be able to germinate in the wet soil.
Jean, the sea eagles are seen regularly in this whole area, including your own yard down below us here.
It's the home of the eagles. Even though they were rare down in Tommy's, but they like the upper lake. Your base here too, what the eagle like fishing. The eagle, she'll dive, and if the fish are moving, little trout jumping, she can scoop. I watched her doing it. She'll scoop, and she'll catch the trout.
They won't go into a place where they can't easily get out of it.
An eagle will not come into the wood because she's a white wingspan, and she won't not go in. If I had a holly tree, I think she won't not go in there. She loves going to what does a dead oak thing now, where she'll have a good take off out of it from a dead oak or from the limb of an oak tree.
Ed, on the Wednesday and Thursday of Holy Week, the birds began singing shortly after six. Do you hear anything further from your mallard? And
no, another mallard, or probably the same one away in the distance, but no other bird song yet. We're still too early, I think.
Dan, we're in the oldest and most important oak woodland in the country.
It's certainly the last remembrance of the native oak woodland is here in Killarney. You have similar woodlands in Glengariff and Glen Bay National Park, not as extensive as they're here, and they glow the foothills here in Tomies and Glen and Derrycunny. They're by far the largest oak woodland in the country.
Danny, you're taking on a huge heritage, aren't you? A huge legacy of nature and conservation and story and social history and geography.
I'm the regional manager here now, but I've been working for the National Parks and Wildlife Service since 1999, and I started my life in the National Parks and Wildlife Service in Glenveagh National Park as a conservation ranger.
Yeah.
But
so you've ranged the country, literally from the farthest north to the farthest south.
I was a volunteer here back in around 95 from college, and spent a few nice months here tagging red deer with Peter O'Toole up in the mountains for a study that Peter was doing at the time.
You weren't in conflict with Dan Kelleher at that time, no?
Well, Dan was the regional manager, but I never got an opportunity to meet Dan.
He was at a much higher level.
He was, of course, yes. But having said that, I mean, I think he came back after a couple of months and stayed here for around 16 months. And I think I wouldn't be here today talking to you as regional manager if I didn't have that experience. And I think one of the things that is vitally important for national parks is that volunteer aspect. It's vitally important to have a connection with Killarney and Kerry as well, and we've the pleasure of new staff having connections with the park, and I think that's very important.
It is. We're going to move on. We want to get down to the waterfall and talk to you down there and try to get clear of the sound of the waterfall to get more bird song further into the woods. We'll talk to you again in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
On our down chorus walk from Delaconhee to Lord Brandon's cottage, it's now just after 6 o'clock, so we're still an hour before sunrise. Remember, it will be most of an hour earlier on our broadcast day of April 29th. It's still dark, but you can hear the great thundering mass of water rushing down the spectacular Delaconhee Cascade several hundred yards south of us. A stereophonic sound is created by the much smaller cascade, which I'm convinced was altered on the visit of Queen Victoria here in 1861. We're standing on the site where once stood the Queen's Cottage, Queen Victoria, here in 1861, in the style of Deanock Lodge, or later Hyde's Cottage. Reverend Arthur Hyde, grandfather of our first president, Douglas Hyde, was Church of Ireland minister in Killarney from 1809 to 1834. I have graphic memories of being eaten alive by midges on my father's fishing visits here in my growing up years, and again a few years ago when I asked to have my birthday picnic here. On her visit in 1861, Queen Victoria wrote in her journal, admiring the scenery and the nature round about us. but complaining that she was being pestered by the midges. Dan, the cottage was built here to look out on the waterfall.
As you look up, you can see the fall near Galway's Bridge. There was a mirror apparently in the front hall, and you reflect the waterfall.
Jean, Dinnock Lodge is still in use, $200,000 to be spent on it, just announced. The vandalised ruins of Ross Cottage near Ross Castle are still to be seen. Jean, why is there nothing left of Queen's or Hyde's or Derriconahy Cottage here?
I don't know why there's nothing left. I suppose it was used here by the gamekeepers, but when the gamekeepers got old and left, Dan could tell you there they had to remove the cottage because there were too many parties here at night and it was too dangerous to leave them at it. People coming out here from the town in big numbers, having big barbecues and all that, and the park had to come around and remove the roof and they had to get rid of them.
Do you remember that, Dan?
I don't, but I'd imagine Linnair Cottage was burned down during the Civil War in 1920. And the bridge here, which is now wooden, there was a much more substantial bridge there. And during the Civil War as well, that bridge was damaged by the natives, I presume. And so much so that it cost a lot of money to build it initially. And he sought compensation from the local authority, and he was paid money for its reconstruction. Mm-hmm. And I would assume that with the Queen's Cottage being so close here, it is quite possible that it may have been burned down at the same time. But certainly there were no parties here in my time anyway. As I said, we didn't acquire this area of land until about the 80s. This area here was part of the Kinmare Estate.
Yeah.
When Mrs. Grosvenor took over the Kinmare Estate in 1952, after the death of the 7th Earl of Kinmare, she inherited this area here. Mm-hmm. And we didn't become involved in it until about the mid-80s or the early 90s. Mm-hmm.
So, Danny, $200,000 to be spent on Dinnock Lodge.
The thatch must be replaced. We're looking to carry out that this year, hopefully. Mm-hmm. The problem with a lot of works at this time is the availability of the right people, contractors and thatchers to carry out this work.
Is it $200,000 just on the thatch?
I think $200,000 is probably an overestimate.
That's the figure published in the papers and so on.
Yeah, so I think possibly a misprint there. We've got historical structures funding for Dinnock Lodge, and the projected price for that is in and around probably 75,000 to 80,000.
Oh, I see.
The 200,000 that is referenced is, we got 200,000 structural funding for maintenance of Knock Rear House. We're looking at restoring the house, fixing the windows and the roof.
Ed, in spite of all the din of the water, there is some sound coming.
I'm hearing a few peeps, song thrush and robin.
The two cascades are on Galway's River, and we crossed Galway's Bridge a few minutes ago. Edward Galway of Queen's County owned over 1,500 acres in Kerry in the 1870s. In the 1830s, Christopher Galway is mentioned as agent to Lord Kenmare in the Ordnance Survey name books. He's recorded as the proprietor of several large business concerns in and around Killarney at the time of Griffith's valuation. He was also one of the principal leasers of property in the parish of Mullaghive in the barony of McGinnighy at the same time. In May 1855, the property known as Killarney Flour Mills, owned by John Galway on lease from the Kenmare Estate, was offered for sale in the encumbered estates court. Jean, you remember the last three gamekeepers who were based up here?
The last one here was Dinny Donahoe. He was known as Doughty. Mm-hmm. He was the last gamekeeper here. Before him, then you had Massey O'Sullivan, back from Beaufort, opening Buttercar and Two Hill. And before that again, you had, as far back as I remember, there was a shaman here. And I'd say he had another brother down on the tower at the same time. Mm-hmm. There was a keeper down on the tower as well, and he was a brother of Shares some steam.
Ed, there's quite a bit of song happening there behind us now, even though we won't pick it up because of the waterfall.
Yeah. It's the usual candidates, as I said to Frank at the start, robin and songthrush. And robin is amazing because it's one of the few birds in Ireland that holds a territory all year round. Mm. So they're singing Christmas Day, they're also singing during the summer solstice. They'd be the first, as I said. Rain will be along shortly, and Great Tate and Wood Pigeon, and they're just starting to wake up now, Frank. As you can see, it's just getting a little bit brighter now again, like, you know, and this will spur all the birds into life now in the next half an hour or so.
I will move from here quickly. Gene, what was the life of the gamekeeper like? What was it, the job? He was difficult, really, wasn't he? He was between the landlord on one side and probably the plain people looking for a bit of meat on the other side.
He had a very quiet life in here anyway.
Had he? There was no poaching here.
At that time, God knows there wasn't, because strict at the time.
Yeah.
Strict at the time, then there was very little poaching, it's a. That's the bridge. That's the bridge. Then we had the duty to stay in for a few hours.
Tell me about that.
He started his car up here at the house one morning, a frosty morning, and he left a roll down here to the bridge. And when he got to the bridge, the car conked out, and his battery was down. And there he was inside the bridge. The bridge was too narrow to open the door, and himself and his wife had to stay sitting inside in the car. And they were lucky enough that a fisherman came along after a couple of hours, and he had to push the car through the bridge to take out Dorothy and the wife. Bridge to take him out of the car, and outside there all morning, a frosty morning.
You remember that as well, Dan?
I do remember it as well. Your man came along, it was Paddy Queeley.
Oh, the postman?
The postman came along, yeah.
Yeah, and pushed it out. Okay. It was a hard life, Danny, wasn't it, the gamekeeper had? I mean, that on the one hand, the local people, they used to say that in a place like Beaufort, that the staple diet was venison.
It's not easy to be the enforcer in any situation, I think, in rural Ireland. Nowadays, and it was probably a lot more difficult to way back in those times where you did have that dynamic going on between the local people looking for a bit of food and the gamekeeper protecting the deer
Are you in that position now?
The role of National Parks and Wildlife Service, I think, is there's part of it is an enforcement role and the protection and enforcement of all the directives and things like that. So there are that dynamic going on, do you know what I mean? So we can't hide away from it.
There's great singing there now.
Song thrush, and when the song thrush likes a note that he's singing, it could be yip, yip, yip. He'll repeat it three or four times. And if you listen out, you might think there's loads of different birds. It's just the one species, robin in the background as well, but it's just song thrush mainly singing, bit of blackbird as well, but mainly song thrush. And as I said, he likes to repeat. It could be blah 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 or yip 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 or ho ho ho, but whatever his tune he likes coming out of his mouth, he usually repeats it three or four times and then goes on to some other note, some other tune.
We'll let Siobhan cut us out and see if she can record some of that a bit more clearly. Anything to add to that, Ed?
No, it's still lots of song thrushes. Great population of song thrushes here.
We'll get as clear of the waterfall as possible and try and hopefully get there before this song begins to die down.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
On our down chorus walk from Derek Cunningham to Lord Brandon's cottage, it's now about 6:25. With me, Dan Kelleher, Killarney Park Superintendent from 1963 to 2001, Regional Manager of the Killarney National Park, Danny O'Keefe, Ornithologist Ed Carty, and Jean Tagney from Garamine. We hurried to get out of the range of the cascade, but it's still slightly in the background, as you're probably hearing. We got around the bend from the gamekeeper's cottage. Here in the woods last summer, I was wandering off the road to the right and then to the left, coming across more lazy beds, finding a ruined cottage still remarkably complete and another covered in the most exotic range of mosses. And then, thinking I'd gone off the road to the right or the west, having to cross over very difficult open mountain, came down heavily on an ankle and thankfully got to the road about a mile above Ladies View, so I'd gone in the opposite direction. Ed, the birds started to sing about 1/4 hour ago and they're still going strongly.
From the last stop to this stop, I heard a dipper, zit, 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 flying along the stream, barely audible above the cascade, but I heard it. In the background, it's more of the same again, but there is blackbird singing here, plenty song thrush, plenty robin, wrens in the background, dunnock. It's starting to wake up and we're starting to get alive.
I've heard it said, at one time, a widow woman with 11 daughters lived in the gamekeeper's cottage just below us. And Dan, she made a path from the cottage up the hill to the Mulgrave police barracks to encourage contact between her daughters and the policeman.
All I know about Mulgrave police barracks is where the unique places barracks go. Nowadays, you can go into hospital if you're given to drink. But in those days, if a member of the force was inclined to drink strong stuff and he became addicted to it, they'd give him the cold turkey out here and they'd send him out here to Mulgrave police barracks. So he'd have to travel a distance before he could get refreshment.
Jean, you have another story about how that path was developed up at the back of the gamekeeper's cottage up to Derek Connehy.
Well, that path was there, probably all was there. When we got to Mass, we'd come here by boat. We'd crossed the Galway Bridge there and we hit a pathway then just beyond the Galway Bridge up around the beef and take a shortcut up to the wood and take us up to the Green Head Church.
So from home to church, how long did it take you?
We came across by boat.
Derek Connehy Church is just a mile up the road. From about 1890 to the early 1950s, it served a widespread remote community. Dan, the priest came from Killarney.
In the early days, they came by pony and trap. When Mass was said, they would fry up the breakfast in the sacristy because it would take them a while to go back to get into the Killarney. And then the people from the Black Valley would walk up here to Mass. Imagine in that time, people had, if they went to go to communion, they'd have to fast from 12 o'clock the night before. So you could imagine the hardships which they had to endure. The church was closed down after the church in the Black Valley was opened, and I remember the first program in Wright in the 60s, it gave a full account of the church building in the Black Valley.
A lot of the people from the valley, they were fasting for a very long time. I mean, if you were the O'Sullivans down at the very end of the valley.
I'll tell you one thing, it could be 2 o'clock on Sunday before they'd get their breakfast. They'd have a drink of water, because so strict at the time, there was no one in the world that could eat food, and they'd come here to Mass and they'd walk back through the valley, back to Crackmore again.
Yeah.
And then all it is, could be 2 o'clock before they get home, and they wouldn't eat their breakfast until they get home.
Jean, by boat from Jeremine on a stormy morning.
You'd come on down the river, calm, and when you come out to the mouth of the river, there you'd have the white horses. When we were young, they were very frightening.
Were you praying in the boat?
Hey, bloody well sure we were, and we all praying inside in the boat with white horse, and when the ball goes so high you lose sight of the land even. When you lose sight of the land, you can be, so then you can start praying. If it got too bad, we'd have to turn back, and after turning back, go home. You were at a missing Mass, so then that's say three rosaries. Couldn't want to tell, but you'd have to say three rosaries. We'd be watching how we'd creep out the door. No, you had to wait for the third.
The religion was very important for
very
them.
Very important, yeah. If you took food, that you could rot the teeth out of your head.
That was the belief.
It was the belief.
Danny, how important is this oak woodland?
Very important. I think I see another spider climbing up your mic there. We're talking about birds, and you mentioned earlier about the mosses. There's a whole array of features within woodlands. One of the most important aspects of woodlands here is the bryophyte layer. Woodlands in Kerry in the southwest and Glengariff Nature Reserve are hyper-oceanic. They're wet. Yeah. Wet places.
And the weather record for March showed the wettest part of the country.
Exactly, yeah. And I've heard that in some instances the bryophyte layer or the biomass that is the bryophytes is more than the woods. There's more biomass in the mosses, so if you took all the mosses out and measured it against all the timber, there's probably more mosses in terms of biomass.
And the huge variety of them. I mean, they talk about 450 different mosses, 237 different liverworts in this whole region.
Absolutely. And so when we look at our woodlands, we need to look just a little bit more at than the trees, and we need to look at all our bryophytes, all our invertebrates. The last couple of years we've done some taxa surveys where we got experts down from lots of different places, universities, consultants, and they're starting to find species, new species here in the park, species that depend on mushrooms and fungi and dead wood material. Mm. And one of the things that I have to take my hat off to Dan in terms of what they did when they managed the park here for years is they had a very strict no foraging policy. And it's very different to other national parks where foraging can take place in, to some degree, but we found species that feed off fungi, for example, that are found nowhere else in Ireland.
Yeah.
And it's down to the policies of Dan way back in the 80s to decide, actually, we think nobody should be taking anything from the national park that is here forever.
Indeed.
Now we have a scientific reason why that's a good thing to do.
Do you want to get more of that bird song before it begins to ease off? Singing continues, Ed.
Typical of woodlands and typical of trees, you know, even though there's not a lot of leaves on the trees at the moment, and it is getting brighter, difficult to see, you know. It's a feature of bird species in woodlands, you know. They can be difficult to see. Tree creepers are notorious for this. They're a small brown bird with a white belly, and they creep up along the backs of trees. Great spotted woodpecker, another species.
Do we have them?
Yes. For years and years and years, regarded as a great rarity in Ireland. Nobody knew why, because they're so common in the UK, along with lesser spotted and green woodpecker. And then there was talks, the late great Frank King in Blenerville, he discussed with me several times way back in the 80s of possibly reintroducing them into Killarney. Never got off the ground. It was just more of a discussion and more of a chat.
So they've come naturally, are they?
They came naturally late 90s, early 2000s.
Right.
A few birds seen in Northern Ireland, a few birds seen on the East Coast in Wicklow, and they started breeding. Now they're here. We haven't got them proven breeding yet in Killarney. I've strongly suspected birds up around Knockrear, birds around Rosscastle. Wouldn't surprise me, heard one here down here this morning. Plenty of bird life around.
Dan, the mountain east of us here on its western side carved on a rock an event involving a member of the Baring banking family of London.
He was Rupert Baring. He was a nephew of Lord Kenmare. He was only 18 years of age. And this was an integral part of the Kenmare deer forest here. Of course, that's the activity, most of the activity in the estates in those days was deer stalking and bird hunting. He came across this dagger and he was a royal with 16 points.
16 points, yeah.
16 points, and he shot it, and there was great excitement in Killarney. It was like after winning the All-Ireland. So
and
they said they'd marked by Carby out on the rock up in Cromaglown Mountain. The place where he fell, I think, was the 20th of September, 1929.
Very good. It carved into a rock face on the eastern side of Cromaglown at the base of Esknamuckie Glen.
That's right.
James Neil Tippy Reg, 1815.
Yeah, that's right. I know where that is, just as you come over there, the Galway River.
That's right.
Before I come up into Ilan.
Yeah. Gene, a huge storm here in the 19th century did mighty damage and had all sorts of consequences.
You know, the huge storm here cut the oak wood. The people described it as if we came out with a cross cut and knocked them all, they all fell to the east. Then they made the shark call at him, and a lot of workmen came in. People from the Gapard and Law, Black Valley and Killarney, they all came up here working, cutting the timber and making the shark call here at the Queen's Cottage. And that's how they got rid of a lot of that oak.
You were saying that some of those might have lived in some of those cottages that I've come across in the woods here.
They did. The people down in the Gapard and Law, they would stay here overnight. They had nothing to go home to, but then they'd bring some bit of lunch to them, they'd live here overnight.
Did you say your grandfather was a charcoal worker here?
My father worked here even. He was working with a horse, sliding the timber down off of the wood, down to the furnace, and father was making the charcoal. Because all casket, there was no chance other him, because all casket work.
Heavy work.
Heavy work with a casket.
Danny, isn't it, the best made plans of mites and men, the weather can do enormous damage to you.
We see it more and more in the park. every year, and it's not just winter time. But I think the amount of rainfall is falling, creating flooding scenarios in the park, and we're seeing it more and more often where certain areas of the park are inaccessible to members of the public. And very often I wonder, we talk about a lot of the terrestrial aspects of the park when it comes to deer and rhododendron and things like that, but we're very much a water park as well, and water is a huge aspect of what we have here, you know, passing the waterfalls.
And there are waterfalls everywhere. I mean, especially this past month, I mean, you go down through the gap and there's water falling on both sides everywhere, and indeed in the mountains around here.
That's it. So I think we're going to have to get used to that going forward. I think flooding scenarios, parks by their very nature are robust habitats and ecosystems where they can deal with that. And I'm sure Jean can remember large flooding scenarios in the Upper Lake. Dan can recall, I suppose, dangerous times when water hit the eye of Brickeen Bridge and the Old Weir Bridge.
Any particular flood that you remember, Jean?
Back at Lord Bundy Cottage, the water went in over the bridge there.
Oh, my gosh.
I seen the water because Kitty O'Connor's son, he parted here off of the bridge, get away from the flood. I just, if he did, the water went into the boat of his car.
My gosh.
Up on the bridge.
Yeah.
That was some flood.
Ed, before we move on.
Directly overhead, Frank. High-pitched, cold hit. And we have our own... You can hear it there now. We have our own race, our subspecies of cold hit in Ireland, Hibernicus. It's pretty much the same as the continental version, except the continental version is much greyer and whiter below. Our one has got a kind of a browny, buffy, a buffish tinge on the underparts, which distinguishes. They're quite rare, but they do occur in Ireland. There's been one or two in Kerry over the years as well. But they're quite loud. Again, it's like the wren, small bird, loud voice. And again, it's just proclaiming, this is my oak tree, or this is half of my oak tree, or this is my holly tree. It doesn't. He won't care if another species such as a robin or a dunnock or a blue tit comes in. He won't care. But if another cold tit comes up to that part of the tree where he is, he won't be happy at all.
Fight to the death. Siobhan, you might get some more of that bird song just before we move on.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
On our down chorus walk from Derrick Lord Bandon's cottage, it's now about 10 to 7. Walking through the great oak woods here with their understudy of holly. Rocks as big as houses dumped here by the melting glaciers over a 2 million year period. Passed by one a few minutes ago with a big oak and a large holly growing on top of it. Now it's bright. Sunrise at 7 this morning. Over the last hour and a half in the dark, saw more deer than ever visible in daytime, the eyes reflecting the light from the lamp, as well herds of wild goats. The most picturesque ruined cottage in the woods above us here, covered in exotically coloured mosses. Ed, what are we hearing now?
So it's a continuation of the same, Frank. Wrens, robins, blackbirds, song thrushes. I also heard a great tit there as well just before we stopped, piercing, teacher, teacher, teacher. Very loud, very distinctive. There are eggs and nestlings in nests at this time of year, Frank. So animals like pine marten, mink, rats, they will climb up trees, they will go into nests. Ground nesting birds, such as meadowpipit skylark, they'll all attract predators like that. So it's survival of the fittest, and birds are alert to all that kind of stuff. Like
Dan, as Danny was saying a few minutes ago, the mosses and lichens and ferns cover every rock and tree here. We're not surprised to learn, as I said, that March was the wettest month for 80 years and that Kerry was the wettest place in Ireland.
Yeah, well, that is quite true. But it doesn't matter, Frank, what time of the year or the amount of water falls. We have the same amount of water every year, roughly about 60, 70, 70 inches.
Over the whole 12 months, it equals out.
In relation to the mosses and the lichens, the reason we have that here is that you have a very close canopy of trees, and that means that the understories, they can dry out. And then you, that coupled with the high rainfall as well, and the rainfall here in Derry is much higher than what you get down below lands in Kearney.
As I was saying a minute ago, the glacial erratics, the huge rocks that we've been coming across here.
It's very hard to imagine that at one time Ireland was south of the equator, and that was exemplified by the fact that the tectonic plates, they moved northwards, and having moved over there, they generated a lot of energy, and they thrust up these mountains in the American Folding, yeah, where you get these east-west mountain ranges where you have the River Blackwater, yeah, and the Bandon and the Lee, yeah, and then you have here then in Killarney you have the famous Timpanogle Glacier, yeah, which formed just north of Mull's Gap, and it moved down through Mull's Gap and it split in two, and half it went down and scoured out the gap of Dunloe, and the other half came down here, and that's exemplified by these moraines and these erratics and also these rochemines.
Danny, the geology, the landscape is another very important part of the story, isn't it?
It's something that I can't really speak about too much other than to say that what we have now is a result of what happened millions of years ago. What's amazing, I think, in Killarney National Park, and I think this region, is we're finding things that we don't expect. And I think one of the major finds in the last couple of years was the Killarney mouse tail fern. And I'm not saying that it's in Derrycunnhy Wood here, but we've found it in more than one location, which means that it just wasn't an incidental happening.
It does emphasise, doesn't it, the huge importance of ongoing research, of constantly examining, constantly looking, constantly learning more about the area.
Absolutely.
Jean, there was a Tinker's Hotel.
The Tinker's Hotel is just beyond the tunnel. There's a big cave there. The Tinker's have come along, and they drive their pony and car into the cave. So their pony and car and themselves, they sleep in the Tinker's Hotel for the night and move on maybe for Kinmare or Glengarry for some Harrigan the following day. Yeah. But you had the Tinker's Hotel there. And the funny thing about it, just above it here, across the river here from the Kinmare River on the Oak Island, you have a building in there. It was called the Knight of Kerry. Some big dances being there once a year. It had name of the Knight of Kerry. It was a funny place to have a ball night anyway.
And how easy is it to access? Are there remains of that still there?
Still there. The walls are still there inside the Oak Island, and that's known as the Knight of Kerry.
And can you get to that from the land? Or
walk into it. I could take a very high floor to make an island of it, but the building is still there, the Knight of Kerry.
Ed, my impression is that we heard more. I'm changing my mind now. I was going to say that we heard more birds in Muckross Gardens last year than we've heard this morning. Not so. We've heard a lot of birds this morning.
We've heard a lot of birds this morning. The birds will only sing for so long, like, you know, and they'll be still singing, and the dawn course doesn't keep going on all day. The birds have to feed themselves. They have to take a break. They have to feed the wife. They have to feed the chicks. They have to sit in eggs. They have to be alert for predators. So they can't devote all the time to singing. I suppose it's a bit like, you know, Elvis Presley or Jim Morrison or Jimi Hendrix, you know, they all have to take a break at some stage, like, you know, they can't keep going forever and ever and ever, like, you know.
That's an interesting analogy. <all right. laughs>
They're all gone from us now, those three singers I just named. But yeah, they will keep singing. There's a chaffinch up here going pink, pink, pink in the background. You know, we will hear different snippets of songs from different birds every now and again, the more we walk. And it's just characteristic of the different habitat. The more it opens up and the more there's spaces between the trees and open ground, then we might come across different species. So that's the way it works, frankly,
indeed,
you know?
Indeed. Danny, amid legend, landscape, flora, fauna, antiquity, history, folklore and the contemporary story, they're all relevant and rich in Killarney National Park.
There's no question, I think, how you can dig deep into folklore. One of the stories that I was told about was the Horse's Glen over Mangerton side, where folklore mentions bands of horses roaming around the place. I mean, I think So lots of things in Killarney, I think, that are additional to what we see here in terms of the woodlands, the lakes and things. They all have that element.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, looking at Croft and Croker's collection of stories here in the 1820s, published in two volumes, small volumes, very valuable now, called The Lore of the Lakes. A wonderful story up in the Horses Glen about a small farmer up there. Too long to tell now. It'd be nice to do a dramatised version of it sometime. Jean, as you say, Dan, all the old buildings, the rock engravings, the lazy beds should all be mapped. They're an important part of the story.
Every step of the way you go in the national park is very important. People should respect it when they come to the park, and what we always say, you should leave it, and the only thing you should leave behind are our footprints.
An important part of that, though, is that people know it, isn't it? That people are aware of what is there.
Education is very important, especially during the war and after. There wasn't that much emphasis on conservation, what have you, but people have become more enlightened now, mm-hmm. and they're very conscious of the environment. And I remember during the last foot and mouth episode, people were asked to stay out of the park, which they did, because they thought it was so highly like that. They didn't want to damage it in any way, so indeed. They respected it. And Killarney is very fortunate to have a place like Killarney National Park at his doorstep.
Jean, especially in the dark there as we were coming along, there was a gang of us together, so it doesn't... But, I mean, it was easy to imagine a place like this being haunted, or imagine spirits of other ages or other times.
All the old people now talk about pokies and fairies and all that, but right down over there at all. I haven't met them. I've travelled all these woods and all these mountains. I have still not no pokie or no fairy.
Travelled them on your own in the dark?
I did. I went day and night. I remember I got caught in the mountain one time. It was the month of November. The night got very dark. My wife had to come to meet me with a flash lamp.
Okay.
I'd gone back a few years ago. Over 40 years ago. See, you have the mortgage here, ladies' view.
Yeah.
And there'll be shiny across of the purple. Lights will blind you. Lights will blind you. And that got me. I think I'd hardly get home that night if my wife didn't come to meet me. Yeah, the lights are very, very, very blinding in your eyes.
Well, we're going to go on. We're going to look down on the whole huge landscape below us, and we'll talk to you from there.
Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee. The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
on our down chorus walk from Delaconahy to Lord Brandon's cottage. It's now 7:20. My guides, Jean Tagney from Jeremine in the Black Valley, ornithologist Ed Carty, Dan Kelleher, who was superintendent of Killarney National Park from 1963 to 2001, and Danny O'Keefe, recently appointed regional manager of Killarney National Park. We're recording this programme on April the 7th, when sunrise is at 6:49. On our broadcast day, April 29th, sunrise is at 6 a.m, 48 minutes earlier. We're looking down on a great classical panorama. We're at the western edge of the woods. High up, a branch of the oak tree frames the view. In the foreground, the westernmost extensive part of the upper lake, with left to right duck, Ronan's in the foreground, McCarthy's behind, and Eagle, and closest to us, Juniper Island. And then the whole length of Cumin Dubh, the Black Valley, sheltered on the north side by the great rampart that is the McGillicuddy Reeks, to the west by Brook na Binne, and across the lake north, Purple Mountain. Ed, it's much quieter now.
But there's still new birds to be added to our list. Hooded crow. Yeah. Ah, ah. I've also heard and seen tree creeper, heard blue tit. But it is quieter. Again, we're coming out of the woods, so we're in different habitat here.
Dan, as we were walking along there, you were talking about ghost stories.
I was walking along by the Mucker's Abbey one night. It was quite dark. And I heard these bagpipes playing, and I thought there was a dance going on or something in the graveyard, and I said I better investigate, otherwise I wouldn't believe that it wasn't going on. When I went in, I found a Scottish bagpiper playing the bagpipes.
Yeah.
Another night I went along, and I saw a red light inside, and sure, I went in, I investigated. It was someone that had a picnic, and they left a fire, the remains of a fire there. I wouldn't believe in these ghosts at all. They're probably, a lot of them in the olden days were there because of the lack of light. But yeah, when the electricity came in, I'd say they all vanished.
One of, if not the first detailed account of Killarney, the farming and the woods, Arthur Young visited Killarney in 1776 and again in 1807. He spoke of the woods we've just walked through.
He said that there was a lot of different craftsmen walking in the woods. You had the tanners, and you had the wheelwrights and the boat builders. They would come here, and they would spend the summer there. They cut down an awful lot of the oak trees, and the oak trees were cut down as well for the making of charcoal. And you had two furnaces at that time, and it would take roughly about maybe 600 trees a year to keep them going. So you could well imagine how the place was deforested.
Gene, in the middle of the lake in front of us, Ronan's Island, Philip Ronan lived here in the 1700s with a black servant. Ronan, a mathematician who taught in Trinity College in Dublin and wrote a treatise on algebra in two books.
He lived there for a while, and the toast was that started then. And there was some of them that wanted to see what can we block on site here on this island. So when they were stopping to investigate this man, he said, no, it's getting too busy for me, I'm going to move out. And he did move out.
Danny,
we're looking at the islands on the lake here, and you can see them, they're all green, and there's only a couple of oaks. And I think when we look at what we really want to have here in the park in terms of the type of woodland that we have is exactly what we can see out in those islands. Right under the oaks, it's all green. So what you have there is you've yew, you've juniper, you've arbutus, and so
you also seem to have some rhododendron out there.
There is rhododendron, absolutely. In terms of what we'd like to have, I think there's an idea here that we have all these different oak woodlands or Scots pine woodlands and yew woodlands. What's representative, I think, in all these woodlands is out there on those islands, and in terms of what we'd like to see here in the park is have a more diverse woodland structures.
So get rid of a lot of the deer and the goats and all that sort of thing.
Deer and goats and lots of other grazers, are you can see them at different times of the year. Control of deer has to be at a county or national level.
Ed,
there's been a lot of talk in the media over the last year or two about bringing back wolves. The lynx might be a far more realistic option.
Dan, during your time here, you had annual burning. I mean, you burnt areas so that you prevented the kind of fire that would have happened on the mountain across from us there last year.
Where we are now at the moment, that was part of the Kinmare Deer Forest. And every year that was burned regularly to provide vegetation or food for the deer. And in our time it was burned, what is these fire lines, you were burning an area roughly about maybe 10 or 20 yards wide. So if we did have a moorland fire then, it would burn to that and it would stop there. Right?
Dean, looking down at the great expanse of Cumann Dubh, the Black Valley, and even further down to Curramore, people like the O'Sullivan's sisters and their long journey to Mass, as we talked about earlier. It's a huge area, a huge geographic area, isn't it?
quite a long walk, too, back in from Derrymore, back in Crackmore. To have to come right through the Black Valley and get down here in the Kerry Way and go on over to the Queen Cottage and go up to the Crenhead Church, fasting since 12 o'clock the night before, and to receive communion, and after Mass go home again, and breakfast wouldn't be until 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Dan, the great enemies, as we've been hearing here, as well as fire, the huge threat to the unique woodlands, above all the spread of the rhododendron, then the deer, as well as the goats.
When I came here way back in 63, I discovered that rhododendrons were playing a major part in the regeneration of woodlands. We started clearing the views there in front of Mucker's house. They were completely blocked right there at the moment, so we got everything down there to the ground, and that'll give an indication how long I'm here. It's just growing back up again.
No more clearing of that kind?
I don't know anything about that, because I'm not in charge. I got into trouble because I think the county manager at the time and the county engineer, he got on to me and he gave out the arts to me, and he says, "You're an officer meant to be cutting down the road." I report you to the Department of Finance to waste taxpayer money. So I said, "Go along and report," and I'm quite happy to defend it. But it is a major problem.
It's huge, Danny. Yes. Some time ago, I was over on the side of under Tommy's on the loop walk there, and looking at the amount of rhododendron literally swamping the whole woodland on the whole side of Shehi and the lower part of Purple and so on. Hundreds of acres of rhododendron there.
To be realistic about it, we can only bite off more than we can chew. A lot of work has been done in the past.
But you really need a permanent workforce working full-time, all of the time, to realistically tackle the problem.
One of the things that we have to do, Frank, I think, is, and what we haven't been doing, is finding out exactly what is the rhododendron issue. And you can see very clearly in some areas like Glenan and Tork and up in Tommy's that there is a rhododendron problem. We have to prioritise what we do, and our woodlands are the main priority in terms of our obligations under Habitats Directives. And,
but the whole woodland there, the whole woodland on the side of Shea is all oak woodland, very extensive oak woodland, right, as you say, right into Glenah and over in Dinas and so on. Without the resources to provide a permanent workforce, literally doing nothing but clearing rhododendron, you won't succeed.
To be honest, Frank, I think to expect workers to be working on rhododendron full-time is too much. Rhododendron work is hard work. And so what we have to do is we have to balance what we've done in the past. The park is split into 72 management zones. And out of that 72 management zones, 53 are in active management, which really means they've been treated at some point in the past, and we're going back in there to treat more seedling, regrowth, etc. So I agree, if we had infinite amount of resources, then we could tackle areas like Tork and Tommy's and Glenah. But we can't forget about the areas that we've treated in the past. And so in terms of the resource, we've started to map everything electronically using ArcGIS. When we've that done, we can sit down and look at a strategy. We have to prioritise the sensitive habitats.
Dan, you're insisting you're going to leave us.
I have to play an under-21 match today.
You look down at the scene that we have underneath us here. We have a tremendous treasure. We have an amazing place. You make the point that if people came out and spent time in places like this, we'd have a healthier, happier, more contented and more fulfilled population.
That's not sure. People came out here and spent a lot more time here rather than looking at TikTok or that type of thing. Yeah. You would have a much healthier mind. You would have internalised what is nature is and what it's all about and what it means at the end of the year and the end of our life.
Dan, thanks. Danny, I mean, as you were saying yourself a minute ago, the islands are an important part of the park, especially as they're a microcosm of what might be on the left of the mainland.
We're looking at the islands as being a window into what was there when maybe wolves and bears were running across here and when the ice sheets retreated. So will we ever get back to that? Maybe in some lifetime. I'm 50 now, so, and I think I have about maybe 15 to 17 years left in the Wildlife Service. What I'd really love to do is to stay working in Killarney National Park until I retire. And looking at things like rhododendron might take a lot longer to solve. It's a mindset, I think, that we have to look at when we do that. They say a society is truly fulfilled when someone plants a tree that they know they'll never sit under the shade of. And I think we have to have that mindset here.
While we were talking there, I heard a croaking raven high up. I couldn't see if it was high up. Our first spring migrant of our walk this morning, Frank, it's in the background, a willow warbler. Always strikes me as being a bit sad. Stats high pitch, but then in is a kind of a sad kind of a note. So there's plenty of them around. They're after coming in the last week or two. I've also heard wood pigeon. It's kind of a hoo, hoo.
And we're saying goodbye to Dan. I mean, I think amazing. 87 then, is it?
Yeah, that's my next stop, I hope. I'll be missing your next stop, but that's the way it is.
You're a mighty man. Thanks indeed for joining us. We're going to move on. We'll talk to you in a few minutes.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly. Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
On our dawn chorus walk from Delacony to Lord Brandon's cottage, it's now 8:05. We're in a grove of oak woods, well, out on the edge of it, on the southwestern shore of the Upper Lake, in the mouth of Derrynawad Stream, close by the footbridge over the stream. Out in front, the islands McCarthy's, Eagle, Ronan's, Duck and Juniper. In the background, on the far shore, Dougherty Wood and Village. Jean, you have a memory of a horse here at this point.
Right at this point at Derrynawad, the old people that's got a town with a pony and car, that leave the car then over at the Queen's Cottage. There was an old shed that, at the courthouse, that leave the car there, untackle the mare, and then because to rough mare, something to come back by boat, they left the mare off before him. She walked right back to Patton. They walked after. When she got to Derrynawad, she'd fall over across the lake and Dougherty. Some of them neighed anyway, and the mare had the fall neighing. She took for the water. That's it now, she's drowned. She's from all the way across the lake and over up into the Ugrit her fall. They were very lucky that they hadn't a harness on her. If they had a harness on her, she was drowned because her hind legs get cut in the belly bands. Mm. But they were very lucky that nothing on her. She got there.
What kind of distance in lake would that have been?
By just a mile of water, don't look much, you know.
Yeah.
Right across the lake there, that's more than a mile of water there.
Yeah. Ed, there's still some singing.
There's a drake mallard all on its own out in the middle of the lake. Jean says, when you see the drake on his own, the female is hatching. A lot of birds are camouflaged that way, so the female bird, which does a lot of the incubation, a lot of raising of the young, they're coloured brown, like think of the cock pheasant and the hen pheasant, almost like two different species. And one is to sit on the eggs and mind the young birds and blend in with the foliage around it, the ground nesting plants. And there's also some cormorants in the islands behind us roosting. They're designed in such a way that they're not 100% waterproof, so they have to come out of the water to dry their wings, and their characteristic, the wings held aloft. The Japanese learned this centuries ago. They used to catch cormorants and bring them onto little skiffs, and they used to put a ring around their neck, and the attached to the ring would be a cord or a rope, and they let the cormorants go in fishing for them, knowing damn well that when the cormorant did catch a fish, it couldn't swallow because of the ring, and then they take the fish out of the cormorant's mouth and they had their supper.
Dan, in the past week I've come across two herds of goats with up to 15 goats in each, as well as ones and twos. They're very damaging, and most, if not all, are not native of this area.
And Danny was saying there, the island woodlands are in what are known as pristine condition. They're probably there for thousands of years, and the reason they're like that because there's no predators or animals on them like goats and deer. But the goats have been here for centuries. even in Arthur Young, when he was here in 1776. Uh-huh. He visited Derrycony here and he said there were a lot of goats there.
But a lot of the goats that we're now seeing are not native.
Some of them are not native because occasionally what people was doing in the past anyway, if they had goats at home, if they had too many of them, if they only got rid of them, they'd come along and they'd drop them off and they'd take to the mountains.
It's another aspect of the park. The place names, like Deir na Mhaid, between us, we're not sure what the translation is. The Deir is obviously an oak woodland, with na Mhaid, we're not certain. There are layers of names in Killarney, because you had the tourist practice where boatmen would name a headland if you were a particularly generous patron, and it was renamed the following week for a further, more generous patron. There are layers of names. I mean, going back, the old Irish names are still very much in the area as well. Jean, for many years, a pair of swans lived here on the lake.
When I was young, going to Mass here, oh, to Derrickin, huh? You had two swans here on the lake. They were here the whole time, up till a short time ago.
So but for how many years do you reckon they lived here?
In my time, I knew they were here for over 50 years. One of them died. She died over the younger stream. She went out up in the green side, and she died there. The male, I'd say he lived for 4 years longer. And when he died, he went out up on the very same side again and died up on the green side again. So the two of them died up on the very same side.
Is that a great indicator of the weather?
If the swans go up the river, I could tell how high the flood was. For Hurricane Charlie, that passed Ladbrandon up. That went right up beyond the bridge. The people were giving out and could the people feeding the swans and making them so tame. They're coming out on the road. They were coming out on the road in front of the ponies. They were there for over a week and then out on the road every day and the ponies didn't like them at all. When Hurricane Charlie came, goodbye with the swans off with them again.
So they knew what was coming.
They knew Hurricane Charlie was coming. But the bridge was attracting them to have, but they came up for shelter, past the bridge. But if they just come up a little bit, it's only a very tiny flood. If they passed Ladbrandon up, pull in your boat. Pull in your boat.
Dan, as we said a while ago, and you continued a bit further, in your 87th year, you were up this morning around 4:30. It's now shortly after 8, and we have another couple of hours to go. What gives you the interest and energy to do it?
I was always active in my life, like, you know, and the idea was to keep going. Treat every day as if it's your last and make the most of it, like, and get the most out of it if you can, like. There's no point in lying in bed, you'll achieve nothing. Some people stay in bed, they're afraid the ceiling might fall down. But they'll be still there, okay? You know. And some people say to me, you're a fool to be getting up so early. I said, I sure I can't help it. I said, the world is full of fools. And I'm one of them, so I can't help that either.
You're not an insomniac. You don't have trouble sleeping, do you?
No, I don't.
You don't?
Unfortunately.
Ed, what was your highlight of this past year, bird-wise?
Since I last spoke to you, Frank, I've got new employment. I'm working with a company called MKO. They're Galway-based. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a lot of bird surveying with them in Kerry and in West Cork. Some people that know me very well are calling it a dream job, getting paid to go bird-watching. I get up early as well. Getting out and about, the late, great Frank King, when I used to talk to him about rare birds, he said, rare birds are the icing on the cake. They're great if you come across them, but just being out, think of all the birds. We haven't seen a whole pile of birds this morning, but we've heard a lot. And that, for me, it's special, you know. I haven't actually been down here before, so for me, this walk is fantastic, being in present company. This is one of the big highlights for me this year. A great spotted woodpecker would be lovely if we heard one. I just seen a jay coming in there, presumably from the across from the islands. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nothing special bird-wise, but we're out and about, we're enjoying it, as Dan has repeatedly said several times so far this morning.
Jean, how long have you been farming? How long have you had a pony and trap in the Gap?
Yeah, I'm driving a pony and trap for the last 70 years. I was pretty young when I started, all right. I might have been around 8 years when I started.
Yeah.
The tourists be saying to me that why don't you retire? Like Dan, there'll be no retirement. If you don't retire, if you retire, you're going to stiffen up. Myself and Dan have no notion of retiring.
as you both have proved this morning. Dan, you walk every day in the National Park. Was there ever a day when you didn't see something new, when you weren't excited by it?
Every day is special, really. You can see the mountains are changing and with the change in the sunlight, and you have clouds, and then you get the clouds going across the sky and all that, everything. It's ever changing. It's never the same. It's a beautiful place. Sometimes you can see the lake, they're like glass, they're like mirrors, and you can see a reflection of the of the landscape. And above all, you meet the people, and they bring back the memories to you, like, you know. When I was only preparing for this walk, I was thinking back of the days I was a great friend of the late Mrs. Grosvenor, who died in 1985. She was a great woman. She is the last to be buried in the crypt in the cathedral, you know, inside the transept door.
Yeah.
You know, she was a great woman. She inherited the Kinmare estate in 1952.
Was she still landlord class? Did she tell you what to do?
Not at all. She was the exact opposite. You'd see her go around town, you think that she didn't even go to national school. She was very humble. She was very human.
Yeah.
You know, she was a great woman. She was very involved in the society, in the Sir Optimists and the Guild Guides. She was a member of the Southern Help Board. She walked with kings and presidents and that type of thing. But only one enough for her, we wouldn't have this area at all, because when she died in 1985, the Upper Lake and the Kinmare Deer Forest were still in her ownership. And we had negotiated with her because she sold half the estate to the syndicate, and then to McShane, because three earls died in the space of 12 years. The sixth earl died, the fifth earl died in 1942, and the sixth earl died in 1948, and the seventh earl died in 1952.
Yeah, so very close
together. She had a very big debt duty.
Huge debt duties.
Yeah.
Indeed. We'll move on. You're definitely leaving us this time, Dan.
I've been called a matter of police muscle.
You're not on the scene now.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
On our down chorus walk from Derek Cunningham to Lord Brandon's cottage, my fellow walkers, Jenny O'Keefe, regional manager of Killarney National Park, Jean Tagney of Garamine, ornithologist Ed Carthy, and Dan Kelleher has retraced his steps. A great man. Great to have him with us. It's now 8:45. We're just beyond a grove of oak woods, further along the southwestern shore of the Upper Lake. McCarthy's, Ronan's, and the other islands out in front, and the whole length of the Upper Lake, with Tork Mountain on the right-hand side and the Eagle's Nest on the left as we look down. Arbutus Island near the northern shore of the lake in front of Kingsborough Wood. Jean, Arbutus berry for Christmas?
There used to be some people in Killarney. I remember Dr. Bill, he was the old doctor in Killarney. He used to always come on to my father and try and preserve a few berries for Christmas. He used to love to have a bit of an Arbutus berry for Christmas.
Would you preserve it, though? You'd
have to cover it. If you didn't, the bird would take it off you.
You were telling a story about your son Neil out fishing on the lake there recently.
Yeah, he was out on the lake doing a bit of trawling. He caught a perch. He's a coarse old trout, like a rough skin, and we don't keep them at all. So he took him off of the hook, and then he just threw him back in the water. The next thing, out over his head, what was there, but the eagle. And the eagle was so fast, before that perch was sunk, the eagle caught him. And up with him, and the eagle had the nest up here just above the ogre. Then the eagle had the nest and flew back up into his nest with his perch.
So there's no carrion left. The eagle clears everything. You also had a story about the problems with the fox and the lads shooting the fox.
If a fox killing the lamb there, if you go to the spotlight at night and shoot the fox will be gone the following morning, because the eagle lay down and up again.
Take the whole animal.
Yeah, he'll catch him with the claws. He'll catch him with his claws and no bother, no less. Team take the fox, no problem.
Ed, we're at the last grove of trees before Lord Brandon's. Bird species that might have been looking at us. You talked about them earlier, but there are difficult species to see in the woodland.
A lot of habitat, a lot of leaf cover. Tree creeper springs to mind. You know, it's a small brown species that goes up along the trunks of trees. Very high-pitched call, so hearing them isn't really an option. They've got really good hearing. They blend in very well with the bark.
The big story in recent weeks, from a bird point of view, is the plan to reintroduce the osprey. In fact, here, I mean, there's Osprey Rock out from Muckers Abbey on the Lower Lake, and neighbours of ours, Jeannie and Maureen Fogarty, the late Jeannie and Maureen, named their house Osprey, so they were very associated with this area.
The osprey is a large bird of prey, dives in feet first, very dramatic into the water for fish. They're largely white underneath the underparts, and their mantle or their wings are kind of a greyish, whitish black.
You're a bit surprised that they haven't chosen here to reintroduce.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of habitat here. The plans are from the NPWS, as far as they make out, to locate some chicks in Norway, I think, and release them later on this year in the southeast.
We have lots of sightings of the osprey.
There's about 50 or 60 records in Kerry. The bulk of them are coming from Kinmare, Killarney area. The problem is you need two to tango, Frank, and a lot of the sightings in Killarney are one bird. I believe there was discussions years ago, maybe in the national park, but certainly in Ireland, to put up platform nests, which is basically a big long telegraph pole, maybe. I think it has to be a minimum 7 or 8 metres high with a platform on top to encourage migrating ospreys. It's been done successfully in other parts of the world.
You were pointing out that the osprey is a migrant, so, and that presents a difficulty, probably.
If they do get released here, but they're originating from Norway, what's their migratory urge? When they do go to Morocco or North Africa for the winter, and when they decide to move back up again this time of year, heading back up through Iberia, France, will they take a left-hand turn to come to Ireland, or will they go straight back up to Norway? It remains to be seen.
It's a challenge, Danny, isn't it?
It is. But it's exciting too, I think, reintroduction of birds of prey that once flew the skies of Ireland. One of the problems, I think, here in Killarney is, and one of the things that the Norwegians advise us, is releasing ospreys where there's whitetail eagles is probably not the best thing to do.
Why is that?
They compete for the same resource, and competitively the whitetail eagles will probably outcompete the ospreys. I think, to be fair to the rest of the country, it's probably good to move these projects around the country.
But they spread,
you know,
anyway, don't they? I mean, the white-tailed eagle have now spread.
Absolutely, but I think to concentrate a release in a certain part of the country is probably better than keeping it in Killarney all the time. One of the things that we did do for the white-tailed eagle release is to release birds in Loch Derg and release birds in Waterford last year. So it's good to spread it around. What we are doing here, and what I can say today, is we are going to put up platforms, just like Ed said, you know what I mean? So we're going to put platforms on trees around the park. I'm not sure whether they'll be taken up by ospreys. They might be taken up by white-tailed eagles, you never know.
Are you aiming them at ospreys specifically?
Yeah. So we had an osprey here for a good couple of months last year, and so you'd never know.
The islands out in front of us here all have a story. Stag and duck might have been favourite shooting places. Eagle, remembering the great birds that were native here up to the 1890s. Juniper, one of our five native evergreen trees. Jean, McCarthy's Island.
Well, you have the McCarthy's and the Moors. The stone, that was about to throw the stone across the Purple Mountain. And land below at the Arbutus Cottage and the Gafferdon Law, that was supposed to be thrown by the McCarthys and the Moors, and that stone is down at the Arbutus Cottage all the time, waiting for a volunteer to throw it back again. what won't happen?
I came across a herd of goats here last Sunday morning. Looking at the area here, Danny, it's very bare, been in contrast with the islands outside. Obviously the goats that are here, the deer that are here. The reintroductions, I think it was Ed mentioned it earlier, wolves in Killarney?
Don't think it's a runner. You can't control the movement of wolves, I think. In large areas, in, say, Yellowstone, where they introduced them, they can. It probably works all right. Ed mentioned the lynx. I think the lynx is probably a difficult one as well. The size of their home range for a pair is huge, depending on the resource of prey. The reintroduction of birds is probably an easier sell, and for areas like here where you have a lot of sheep, introducing a large predatory cat is probably not the easiest thing to do.
How would you feel about wolves being reintroduced?
We don't want them at all. The first thing they'd wipe out is the deer. They'd be gone in a couple of years, they'd wipe out every deer we'd have, right in and seek it.
Up the Garamine River or the lakes?
Mink and Pine Martin, when the salmon was spawning. They were catching the salmon, catching by the side, and take out the eggs out of the salmon, destroying them, trying to leave them on the bank. The old minky, the dirty lad. And
was that happening much this year?
They done a good bit of it.
Did they?
They done a good bit of it, they did, yeah. The cock salmon, like when he'll see them, he'll turn around to bite. He'll turn around to bite the mink or the pine marten, yeah, to mind the nest. And so they'll only catch him by the side, and they'll love the salmon egg, then and catch him by the side and pull out the eggs, and that's it.
Yeah.
Destroy him.
When the white-tailed eagles were introduced here, the crows were attacking them.
Oh, they damned them all here. Yeah. And the crow, he'll fly over the eagles, and they keep diving at the eagle. And by the end of the eagle, he won't even bother them. You said that he'd turn on them sometimes, he won't. Yeah, I was down the eagle nest now last week, and the eagle, he came all the way up, and the crows, they're diving at him. They came right here to the mouth of the river, and the crows decided they'd go away, and yes, and the crows went away, the eagle turned back and went away down again to his ears alone. Yeah. He got rid of the crow. Okay. He kept coming, he got rid of the crows anyway.
Fitting that Gene should be talking about crows when we have two ravens croaking over our head.
It's all here, isn't it, Danny?
The whole nature of what we have here, and everything is connected. One of the species we have here is wood ants. Aphids on the trees secrete a glucose sac. The wood ants feed on that. The wood ants farm the aphids on certain trees. So they offer a protection to the aphids. Coal tits or blue tits that nest on trees that have wood ants have a higher brood number. The links that we have in nature are so tightly entwined that if you impact one, you could impact the other. There's a lot that we don't know in terms of the fire that happened here in 21. We're still looking at finding out what the impact was. Once we come to the conclusion of that, it will tell us an awful lot about what happens in fires.
Might it also tell you that you must have some burning if you're going to control the likelihood of this sort of thing happening again?
I think burning is the last resort. I think what we have to do is restore some of our uplands to what they were before. Should we be putting our own cattle on the hills? We have about 80 Kerry cattle. Should we be putting cattle on the hill to create that mosaic of habitats that...
But there was an experiment on that, wasn't there, up in that valley in Firth and the Tork Migratory area, and it just fizzled out. It appears not to have worked.
If you're going to start the process and a project where you're going to have cattle on the hill, you have to continue it.
Yeah.
So it's about that, having a sustainable and starting a sustainable project, that you have the staff to do it, you have to maintain it, and you have to start with a view to continuing this for a long period.
We'll move on. Our last stop over at Lord Brandon's cottage.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.
On our down chorus walk from Delaconhee to Lord Brandon's cottage, it's now 25 to 10. We started off at half past five, you might remember. We're at Lord Brandon's cottage on the boat dock at the estuary of the Garamine River, shortly before it enters the western end of the upper lake. This is the point where the final stage of the Killarney day trip down through the Three Lakes begins. The Killarney day trip was among the many tourism initiatives started by Thomas Fort Viscount Kenmare, who came of age in 1747. An 18th century guide has an illustration by Jonathan Fisher of Ronan's black servant, as I said earlier, bugling the day trip boats as they pass the island. A Lawrence photograph, I think it is, shows the visitors waiting for the boats here in 1895, looking out at the lake, the islands, the mountains, much as it would have been for Fisher in the 1770s and Lawrence, our French's photographer, in 1895. According to local folklore, Lord Brandon imprisoned his young wife after hearing that she had an affair with Lord Melbourne, Britain's future Prime Minister. The affair was brought to court in 1829 after Lord Brandon found intimate letters between the two. The issue was a major sensation in Britain of the day. There's a couple of stories about the tower at Lord Brandon's cottage. The first is that it allowed Lord Brandon to shoot deer from a high point. The second says the tower was built to give Brandon's wife freedom. She had complained that she was deprived of fresh air. Freedom while still locked up. Jean,
Well, I think that tower, it was a lookout tower for the landlord.
To watch over the rest of you that you weren't doing anything wrong?
Well, he was trying to save himself in case anybody come into him. He didn't want any outsiders to come at him. And along with that, he had the river chained down at the mouth of the river. That river was chained at night. I seen the chain. Every link of the chain, big as a horseshoe, big chains, could take a tractor to lift the chain nearly. That river used to be chained every night.
And why was that? To stop anybody coming up?
In case any boats had come through. The chain was there in case anybody come through at night.
These were people who had maybe various illegal activities in mind, or was it that they wanted to stop people not paying the toll?
If a boat came, there'd be people from way down below that would be strange coming up to maybe to see him or to check him out. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want any of that. Yeah. He would like Napoleon, he wanted to stay on his own.
Danny, any plans for Lord Brandon's tower?
I was just looking at it, Frank. There's a tree growing up the top of it. We'll probably look at it all right in terms of restoring it back, but I'm not sure what the function was. I think it could have been a folly too.
Up to the 1980s, the centre here was a two-storey house where we can, to the left of the tower, where the O'Connor family lived. There are ruined remains behind the two-storey house. Dean, were those ruins the remains of Lord Brandon's hunting lodge, the original hunting lodge?
That probably were. You know, the tourist rooms are, don't you? Where you see the wall there, that's where the rooms are. When the tourists come through from the gap in law, they'd have their lunch there. Then when they built this cottage, then they took down them ruins. Mm-hmm. And they just left the wall there.
Yeah.
And this is a new pier. Well, this pier wasn't there at all before. The pier was in the canal. The boat to come in the canal there by the falls, and I just had a short walk from the tourist rooms down to the boat.
Down here, duck, water hen, and as Dean told us, swans. Ed, there have been a number of rarities found in this area.
Turtle dove. It may not be a real turtle dove country, but there was one seen down here. They don't sound anything like our own pigeons or doves, which would be kind of hoarse and that. The turtle dove's got a purring call. That kind of a... People go onto YouTube, they'll get the real version, but that's the best I can come. Other species would be red start. It's related to robins and thrushes. They're scarce migrant, but it's bred here a few times in Killarney National Park, a couple of times at Derrycunny, so that's a nice bird. It's got a lovely red throat, black mask, bluish mantle or bluish wings. And another bird as well that was down here, I think it was probably closer to Dinas. Unfortunately, they're on the way out, I think, in Ireland, certainly in Kerry, is the nightjar, a nocturnal species. They come out at night and they have a lovely churring call.
You also mentioned the ring ousel and the wood warbler, so there have been a lot of rarities.
Yeah, the ring ousel is more of a mountainous bird up high, and again, that's in decline, as we mentioned about the ospreys earlier on. It's a migratory species, so maybe it's not what's happening here, it could be elsewhere, but they're a lovely blackbird-type bird with a white throat, and they're high up. But there was one here in the woods, and the wood warbler, several records during the summer in Derrycunny, never have proven to breed and carry great birds down here over the years.
Yeah, Gene, a Killarney day trip at midnight in the early 1920s.
It was done. It was the Black and Tans that were leaving Killarney the following day, and they wanted to do the trip through the Gap and Law and do the boat trip. They done the boat trip at 12 o'clock at night, and they shoot the rapids down. The only way to shoot the rapids was carry the side of turf and the gallon of paraffinale and steep it in paraffinale. Maybe put up in a dish or something and leave it go with the current and follow the sandy turf down the rapids to get you to shoot the rapids. 12 o'clock at night, and that was the Black and Tans.
And you think it was because they were going, it wasn't any security reasons?
They were going home the following morning. Yeah. That's where they done it.
Yeah. It's even part of the Civil War is recorded in the park, Danny. All human life is here.
Everything, yeah. Frank, absolutely. And I think there's plenty of room for more for the future, and your programme certainly will go down in the annals of recorded history for future people.
You couldn't do it any other way, though, because you couldn't. I mean, we couldn't have got that bird song if we didn't go when we did go and the way we did go.
Absolutely, and I just want to maybe reassure people that if you start in Derrycunny, and you come to walk to Lord Brendan's, it will not take you 4 hours.
No, okay. It's an hour.
It's about an hour or 45 minutes. Yeah. So yeah. It's a really good trip. Walk to Derrynconeghy and then get a boat trip back. Fantastic, can't recommend it.
Absolutely, yeah. Great way to spend
yeah.
a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been going on for so long, Jean. I mean, you have a record showing ponies being ridden by, I think you said Italians in 1780, was it?
They said that, I heard that, that the Italians came through the capital law in 1780. At that time, because pony back, and we know English saddles at him, because side saddles, that's right through the capital law and side saddle. That passed the cottage over here, over to Derrynewad, and I meet the coach and four to Derrynewad. Before we started over to Derrynewad here at the Queen's Cottage, you had the coach house there, and I used to have a coach and four there and drive back to Derrynewad, and the people go over on pony back and for Killarney, the Lake Hotel or something.
So it was just ponies then? It was all.
You had no trap, you had no trap at all. At that
but that
time.
Changed. In between, you had a different kind of transport.
The hay car and the cushion with a bag of hay.
And did that go on for long?
It did, it went for a good while. They said that for a while, that there was only one trap there for a while, and there's just turns in this one trap. It's a different story now. It's all traps now, no ponies. We've no insurance now for ponies.
Oh, so there are no ponies anymore?
We can no more ponies in the capital law, no insurance.
When did that end?
6 or 8 years.
Oh, did it
now in no insurance.
I guess.
We barely look at our insurance for the pony and trap.
Yeah.
And it's hard enough to keep up with them. Because when I talk about hundreds anymore, thousands for one pony, one trap.
Final report, Ed.
Fantastic morning, not just for the birds, but listen to Dan and Jean and Danny and yourself, Frank, and having chats when the microphone was off air. Very interesting, as Danny said, like, you know, go down in the annals of history, like, you know, brilliant.
It was wonderful, wonderful. Danny, there's a great cruelty in nature. I mean, in an earlier programme, Jean told us about a pine marten slaughtering all of his wife Mary's Christmas turkeys. Yeah. The mink, the robin can be a killer. And that's the reality. There is great cruelty in nature.
When we look at the types of predators that we have here, white-tailed eagles, barn owls, short-eared owls, buzzards, peregrines.
But even the little robin that everybody thinks is cosy and they'd love to have it at home and so on, but he won't board any opposition.
Absolutely not. But I think the more people are out experiencing nature, I think the better understanding of that type of thing goes on. Programmes like yourselves can only help with that education and understanding of nature.
Attenborough took a month to get 4 minutes in Killarney. We've done 2 hours in about 4 hours.
One of the things, the whole nature of telling stories, social media, making programmes and things like that, there's a whole array of different types, you know. So since I've come to the park, we've been far more active on social media and creating stories. We have our own Dawn Chorus on the 6th of May. We had a very successful Deer Rut programme in October last year. So we're starting to create stories. There's more to come from Killarney. There's plenty of opportunities that the park has to talk about nature, but also to talk about the characters like Dan Keller and Jean Tagney here. Mm. I think there's a lot more to do.
What has been the biggest change, Jean, would you say, in your life in Garamine?
Well, because we have way more tours now than we had that time, and the good thing about it is the seasons have got much longer. I remember when the season started in May, when the school had opened in September.
That was it,
because all over, which are now. We were down there this year in February, the end of February. Mm. If the weather stay anywhere fair, we'll be down there until early November. So yeah, that's a big change.
Yeah. And of course, there's a great facility here. By the way, the primroses in bloom here at the moment.
Oh, they're
stunning.
Lovely.
They're tremendous. And it's a great place to come and get a cup of tea and get a bowl of soup or a sandwich or whatever. What more magical place to hear the Dawn Chorus than walking from Derrynconeghy by Derrynconeghy Cascade through part of Killarney's unique 1,500-acre oak woodland and along the shore of the Upper Lake to Lord Brandon's cottage, and if time allowed, to go by boat through the Three Lakes to Roscastle, or to walk or go by horseback, or, well, not horseback anymore from what Jean says, by horse and trap, onto the Black Valley and the Gap of Dunloe to Kate Carney's cottage. Very special thanks to my fellow walkers, Jean Tagney, Dan Kelleher, Ed Carty and Danny O'Keefe. On today's programme, location sound, Siobhan Lewis, and post-production, Colette Foley. From me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday in May, a very special programme. More about that later. Thanks for your company. Francis Jones will be with you after the news.
Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Sean Lynch and John O'Rahilly, Hogan's Funeral Home, Tralee.